As I was saying, it's my great pleasure to be able to introduce Colonel Dave Schroeder. Dave is the keynote speaker tonight. He's come to us, he's flown in from the United States on request. We were looking for a speaker, and a number of options were out there, and it was somebody who had military experience, who had perhaps designed military war games, but who also had an understanding of the business concept and could straddle the chasm, I think it was referred to earlier, between the sort of military, what was it? The crossing the chasm between the two sort of communities, the business and the wargaming community. Now, Colonel Dave is a long time serving reserve officer in the United States Army Reserve. He's currently a full colonel and is serving at the moment, living in Salt Lake City, but I think commuting to work quite some distance, and primarily experienced in the artillery, but at the moment I think working with one of the headquarters out there. Not only that, he comes with a degree in electrical engineering and also business management. He's got a vast amount of experience in the military, in the American military, and has contributed towards the Army Six Sigma program. I think he was, if I get that right, he was selected to appear in a video along with the Chief of Staff, implemented it in Fort Douglas, and was selected as the best officer of the reserves in that particular period. Not only that, the way I found Colonel Dave was getting more and more interested in World War I gaming is I discovered his outstanding game system, Der Weltkrieg, which in my personal opinion is the best of the World War I games that I've found thus far. And he's also, of course, a serving officer. And he wrote the book, Business in the Trenches, which is taking the lessons from the First World War and applying them to business. So I think there's not much more I can add at this point now. I'll hand over to Dave, but thanks very much for coming.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you. Before I get started, some of you scared me there with some of your legal disclaimers, so I'll do the same. Although I'm a serving colonel in the Army Reserve, I'm talking as a civilian here. This is my own stuff here. Also, I learned from the military that before talking, I should tell people what I'm going to tell them, and then tell them what I told them. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. So what I'm going to talk about today is, first, we hear all the converted about war games, or whatever it is that we call them. And I want to try to give you some stories, some ammunition to help you in the fight as we all go back and try to promote the use of wargaming within our organizations. And then also I'm going to talk about complexity versus playability in war games, and how to make sure that you focus on the core issues. All right, so I've titled my address, War Games, Essential Simulations for Military and Business. So let's start by building the argument about why they're so essential. The big question for decision makers is frequently, what should I do now? And in fact, this is why we have the vast array of consulting firms, management gurus, and so on that we do. Many leaders, uncertain as to what to do, yet wanting to make that big splash, make a big name for themselves, fall into various traps that we've all seen. First, they might embark on unwise mergers or acquisitions. A classic example of this, one that I'm very familiar with, is the HP merger with Compaq. Or they might get involved with other kinds of management fads. And I actually found this diagram. These are the most common management fads over the last 50 years. Okay? Or maybe they decide to do some other common things like extreme cost-cutting measures, many of which end up being actually counterproductive. Or they could just decide to march off into some other unknown territory. All of these courses of action frequently lead to significant losses, if not outright disaster. So the basic question still is, how do decision makers figure out what to do? The problem is that there is no science that gives them the answer. One more. Okay. Math, as we know, is a science. For almost any equation, there is a specific correct answer. But leadership decision-making is an art. There is no specific right answer. Any of the pictures you see here depict the night sky, even though they're very different in style and execution. So regarding leadership, you can't just teach people specifically what to do in every single situation. but you can provide them with a background and insight into situations similar to what they will face. And that's why we're here. They can then draw on this background to help them make good decisions and avoid mistakes. The best method for this type of teaching starts out with stories and analogies. Analogies allow for teaching through storytelling, and storytelling is one of the best ways to make lasting and memorable points. Stories are powerful. We remember them. We remember the moral to the story, and we learn what to do or what not to do from them. We all remember these things. Stories about military history are applicable to both the military and to business. This is because there are so many striking similarities between the business world and military operations. Both have high-pressure environments, extreme competition over big stakes. They're both large-scale endeavors involving logistics, personnel issues, critical decisions over resource allocation, and so on. And this is why I wrote the book, Business in the Trenches. I've been working for years on my game system, Der Weltkrieg, and was thoroughly familiar with the intricacies, the details, and the dynamics of World War I. And while working as a business consultant, I would see people in leadership positions confronted with situations very similar to those faced by their World War I counterparts. And then, no surprise, I would see them make the exact same decisions as their World War I counterparts for the exact same reasons when they were faced with those situations. The point is that basic human tendencies are the same, no matter what age we live in. Okay, so sometimes, or often, it seems that the only things that really change are technology and fashion, right? Think about the similarities of what they did to the organizations they led. All right, let me give you a simple, specific example from my book. In the 1890s, a very popular book was published by the American Admiral Mahan. This book became so popular that it influenced many world leaders to commence large-scale naval building programs. Among those was the German Kaiser. Excuse me. The problem for Germany was that she was primarily a land power. Building the fleet took resources away from the expansion of the army Schlieffen called for in his famous plan. In fact, every one of these battleships, its escorts, and supporting infrastructure cost the Germans the equivalent of an entire army division. And think what those divisions could have done had they been part of the Schlieffen plan. Instead, the battle fleet's construction resulted in the ill-advised arms race with the British, which antagonized them obviously to no end and put them firmly on the opposing side. In the end, the fleet does almost nothing to assist the Germans in their military endeavors during the war. And in fact, it ends up scuttled at Scapa Flow. It is one of the best examples of huge expenditures that deprived an entire country, in this case, of resources that could have made a big difference elsewhere. Now, this story is memorable because it really happened. It had a dramatic impact on history. And people can apply this story to what they've seen in their own lives, what they experience in their own organizations, to see that such things are still far, far to come. The World War I stories in my book, and these are just some examples, be it the disorganization and confusion about who's defending what at Verdun, Passchendaele, Sukhomlinov, and his preventing the Russians from advancing their tactics, and then the differences between Petain and Nivelle in the aftermath of Verdun. Okay. These stories are great at providing insight into both how to and how not to deal with common decision-making situations. And they provide a framework for discussing pressing similar business issues today. This allows for a better exploration of what is currently going on, what the good or bad options might be in moving forward. Yet business in the trenches, with all of its stories and analogies, can only get you so far. Stories and analogies do not necessarily get into the operational dynamics and many of the specifics of the situations that they describe. The person listening to the stories is not fully immersed in the role of the historical counterpart. We need to go much further, and we can, in completely immersing people in the intricacies, the pressures, the specific decision-making involved in command and organizational leadership. Military storytelling provides only a basic level of understanding. True insight, as we here know, must come from a deeper source of knowledge and experience. To point this out, look at this map of a military plan. Ask yourself, do you really know what is going on here? Where is strength and where is weakness? What is the terrain? What are the other obstacles to movement? And most importantly, how can you tell if this plan has a good chance of success or if it might lead to disaster? You can't. There just isn't enough specific information on this map. Anyone can draw arrows on a map. And in business, almost anyone can write a business plan that envisions things turning out the way they want them to. Fortunately, we here know that there is a way to gain a deeper understanding of what the true situation is and what the prospects of success for the plan are. Wargaming can provide true insight into reality and what the best options are for a given situation. Through war games, you learn how to determine where there's strength and where there's weakness. You can make decisions about how to deploy, move, and use the resources that you have available. You are placed in direct competition with someone, so there's that added element of pressure to the decision making. And all of this immerses the player into the scenario and requires them to work out the best possible strategies for success. In fact, wargaming fosters better skills in all of these areas, from strategy creation through execution and project management. And all of this is not just applicable, but crucial to success, both in the military and in business. Just like the military, businesses need to understand how to best employ critical and limited resources. Their leaders need to have better insight into their specific situations in order to create winning strategies. Everyone can develop and improve these kinds of skills and abilities through wargaming. Even simple war games provide a better basic understanding of fundamental strategic principles. One such principle is the importance of concentrating strength against relative weakness. So here is the map from the simplistic pseudo-war game Stratego. I think we've all seen this. The maps on the lakes on the map force the players into three separate channels, a left, a right, and a center. Let's say a player's total combined strength has a value of 9. In business terms, think of it as a budget of maybe 9 million. Most people tend to spread their strength equally between the three channels, between the three areas, 3 in the center, 3 on each flank. This is very similar to the tendency of business decision makers to spread their resources fairly equally between business units or departments. And as we know, unimaginative military leaders tend to do the same thing. But to consistently win at Stratego, could you advance one more? Okay. You have to learn to concentrate, to put more strength in one area at the expense of others. Say this spread of 6-1-2 versus the more static 3-3-3. In more realistic war games, you learn more about how to concentrate strength against weakness and about how to create viable strategies while accepting and dealing with certain risks. Personally, I've seen this done to dramatic effect in business. And let's talk about a specific business case. I was working with Texas Instruments in the mid-1990s. At the time, it appeared that the company was on autopilot, and it was starting to have some serious difficulty. It had low growth, customers were increasingly complaining about poor product quality, and there was increasingly intense competition in the marketplace. Also, the company, like many others, had dissipated its assets into multiple side endeavors, like the defense business, consumer products like digital watches and laptop computers. The CEO at the time, Mr. Jenkins, on the far left, then died suddenly without having a succession plan. The company's board then stepped in and actually made some very wise decisions. First, it decided that the company's fundamental business was semiconductors. So it bypassed all of the executives that Jenkins had brought with him from the defense unit and instead hired an internal semiconductor guy, who you see here, Mr. Tom Engebus, to run the business. Tom started by selling off the side businesses. For example, he sold the defense division to Raytheon. Then he looked at the company's semiconductor strategy. Go ahead, the next one. Okay. He clearly identified that the company had a broad front strategy, engaging in almost every different semiconductor market. The markets included microprocessors, memory chips, graphic chips, and so on, what you see here, over through digital signal processors. Tom decided to close down all of the projects in the most prestigious product line, microprocessors. He did this because he realized that the company's prospects in this area, in this particular area, were very dismal due to Intel's relative strength. In war game terms, Intel in that area is like a 25 to a 30, AMD is a 3 to a 4, TI at the time was maybe a 2 to a 3. He then scaled back the company's exposure in both memory and graphic chips by shutting down additional projects there. And he also engaged in some strategic partnerships with some former competitors, further reducing the amount of exposure that they had in both of those sectors. Now, in doing all of this, he had to accept major losses because the company had to admit by closing down these projects that it would never see any return from these things that had been in development for years and had cost the company untold millions of dollars. But he took the critical resources freed up from the projects that he shut down or scaled back, and he moved them to the emerging area of digital signal processors. And with these additional resources, the company was able to make huge breakthroughs versus the competition in this area, and in fact came to dominate the market battle space. And in fact, they still dominate it today. This ushered in a new era of dominant success for Texas Instruments and ensured the prosperity of the company for years to come. To me, this was a great illustration of someone taking wargaming principles and applying it specifically to their business situation to make a dramatic improvement in the company's performance and prospects for years to come. All right. Now I want to talk about the different levels of understanding that I've alluded to. For me, understanding is like a river. And there are three general levels of understanding when it comes to military or other complex operations. At the shallow level are the stories that we started by talking about. You know something about what happened. You know some of the details. You can get to the middle level by extensive reading and study, when you learn much more about what happened and why. But reaching the deepest level can only come from wargaming. By being placed in the role of a critical decision maker, you learn why things happened the way they did and how critical resources were used. But more importantly, you discover what the other options were, what could have been done differently. You see for yourself not just what was done, but what could have been done and how changes in the use of the resources available could have produced vastly different results. To use another similar analogy, understanding military operations or complex business concerns is in a way like understanding music. The shallow level is listening. You know what the music sounds like. Reaching the middle level comes from reading music by knowing what the notes and symbols mean. But the deepest level is only reachable by actually playing an instrument. Now, I like to use this example or this analogy because my wife is a professional oboe player. and her music and her instrument to me are as difficult to understand as wargaming often is to the uninitiated. Playing an instrument like an oboe is difficult to learn. You can't just get an instrument and an instruction manual and think that you're going to learn how to play the oboe. You would fail spectacularly if you did this. Instead, you have to learn how to use the instrument by taking lessons from an instructor, and you have to practice to get good at it. Let me just stop for a second and say, the time to learn how to play the instrument is not when the concert starts. Okay? And that's unfortunately the situation we're often placing people in. All right. So, because the intricacies are so complex, you do need an instructor. And, in fact, it would be nice if we had instructors for war games all of the time as well. This was my first war game when I was 11 or 12, France 1940. I got it. I knew no one else who played war games. I came home. I opened it up. There were like 16 pages of rules. It took me a couple of weeks to figure it out. And I really had to motivate myself, wow, I'm going to stick to this until I figure it out because I want to that much. Think of people who play instruments on their own. It's the same with them. All right, but most people are either unable or unwilling to learn these things on their own. They see them just like that oboe and the music, and they think this is just way too hard. It's going to take way too much time and effort. So we need to help others learn how to use war games. We need to be the instructors, because without an instructor, learning war games is still very difficult. To help those that are trying to learn or are new to wargaming, I even created tutorial videos on my own war games on the basic mechanics of the games. This is better than just reading the rules, as you can see the rules in action. And the videos are meant as aids for mentors as they teach others how to play the games. But still, the best way, and what's really fundamental, is having a mentor, having an instructor. But no matter how you learn, to gain the deepest level of understanding that war games can provide, you have to invest the time. You have to practice at it, just like with the instrument. You need to play solo and with others over and over again. Now, showing people war games in limited situations is better than nothing, but we have to move into training people in how to play the games to be able to use the simulations for themselves. If we don't train them how to use war games, they just won't get it. They won't invest the time and effort to figure it out on their own. They will fail to grasp the deepest level of understanding, which is what we want them to have. Being able to use simulations should be a prerequisite to reaching higher levels of decision making, both in the military and in business. Many will say, but most people are just overwhelmed with the complexity of the situations they're faced with the numbers of decisions that they have to make, in seeing the big picture when confronted with so much all at once. To echo what I started out by saying, most people just won't know what to do. Now, I would hope that we would want people at senior levels that are able to do these things. We want senior leaders who aren't overwhelmed by what others see as complex. We want them to know how to handle critical decision-making situations. We want the people making decisions to have the skills and the insight to make the best decisions possible. So we need to look at how we help people gain these skills. We need to, again referencing that musical analogy, teach people how to play the instruments. We need courses in college, and I'm very thrilled by what I've seen here at King's College. We need courses in college like Wargaming 101 for history students. I personally do not understand how someone can gain the deepest level of understanding of historical military operations without wargaming. To me, that's like somebody learning how to conduct an orchestra without playing an instrument. That's To me, that's just incredible that even anyone would even attempt to do that. Okay. All right. Professional education for military officers should require them to learn to use war games and should include more use of war games in discussing both history and decision making. Businesses need to provide training in war games and similar business simulations for those aspiring to higher levels of responsibility. And they should even use an evaluation of the skills and abilities people show in using the simulations in making better leadership selection decisions. All of us here need to be in the vanguard in promoting, even mandating, training in the use of war games. Now I want to discuss wargaming itself and my philosophy of how to handle complexity in simulations. Let me start by telling you one of the most insightful stories I ever heard. I was trained in the university as an electrical engineer, and part of the degree program involved attending a weekly lecture series where a senior experienced engineer came back and would tell us stories about their career, stories about the most memorable or important experiences that they had. And one such lecturer was a senior engineer with NASA, and he had been with them since almost the beginning. And he told us this story about the Explorer satellite, which you see here. And the Explorer was the American response to Sputnik. Now, NASA had planned to track the satellite, which is very important, by just using slide rules. The slide rule math worked out by, actually, these women that you see here on the bottom left. And they were using just Newton's equations for two bodies in motion. Now, at the time, computers were just becoming available, and one was put at the program's disposal. So the people responsible for tracking thought, wow, with a computer, we can add all kinds of things to the tracking program. So they added in things like the effects of drag in a low-density atmosphere, the effects of extreme heat and cold, effects of solar winds and radiation, and basically everything else that they could think of. Well, NASA successfully launched the Explorer satellite, and then they lost track of it before it completed a single orbit. They were forced to take incredibly embarrassing emergency measures. It just so happens that a neighbor of this engineer had mentioned to him that he was an executive on the National Boy Scout Council. And it just so happened that the Boy Scouts were going to be making contraptions out of milk cartons to track the Explorer satellite, and then they would call back to some national, hotline number and report their observations. NASA actually had to call the Boy Scouts and ask them, where is our satellite? In the meantime, they went back into the computer program and stripped everything out except for those original equations for Newton's two bodies in motion. All right, so the moral of the story, since we're telling stories here, is that when you try to factor in everything, as many computer models do, you can easily lose sight of the actual outcome. The point is that you cannot and you must not, in your simulations, lose sight of the core issues. So what are the core issues? Some of the most important are identification of critical and/or bottleneck resources, knowing what the fundamental cause and effect relationships are, identification and then optimization of core processes, and this usually involves the movement and application of your critical resources, and having a good reconnaissance of the operating environment. So reflect back for a moment on that story I told you about Texas Instruments. The critical resource was design engineers. The strategy for success was to concentrate that critical resource in the newly developed area of digital signal processors. The core process was semiconductor design, and concentration into digital signal processors was enabled by a good reconnaissance of the competitive business environment. All right, now let me tell you how I applied these principles in my design philosophy for my own war games, Der Weltkrieg. In my teenage years, I spent a lot of time playing this game here, War in Europe. I probably played this game, I can admit to you, every day straight for about 2 to 3 years. All right. By the end of that time, though, I was frustrated by what I saw as some real shortcomings with the game. Among those were that there was no limit on attacking. Every unit could attack every turn as long as it was close enough to a rail supply line. Critical units, like my panzer divisions, could often make it through a long campaign, and they were still at full strength. And the map was very basic, containing only very crude terrain information, as you see here. So while it was still fundamentally a good game, I thought it was lacking in many areas. On the other side, I also have issues with many modern wargame designs, especially those that use computers. The tendency with computer-based games, just as in the Explorer tracking story, is to add in way too much detail. In some computer war games I've seen and even played, you have to make decisions about every single ship, every aircraft, every platoon, every soldier. Someone told me the story about the computer model calculated how much water was in every soldier's canteen. Really? You know? Okay. These kinds of games get into so much minutia that you lose sight of the big picture, the core issues. It's the Explorer story all over again. So now let me tell you about my war games and how I design them to work. I design and publish a series of games on World War I called the Der Weltkrieg series. The games are currently bundled together by front, and then there's a grand campaign module that you can use to link them all together. In fact, it should show here on the next slide.
Go ahead.
All right. The games themselves are at the brigade division level on a scale of 20 kilometers per hex, with each turn representing about 4 days of real time. The games can be played as individual campaigns like the Schlieffen plan you see here, or they can be combined with a grand campaign game to simulate the entire war on all fronts from start to finish. And this is from the Vassal module. The fundamentals of my war game system are based on what I consider to be the core issues of World War I. First, 50% of the casualties in the war were caused by artillery. Second, the critical bottleneck resource was artillery ammunition. And third, in open terrain, the attacker needs 3 times the defender's strength for parity in combat outcome. Core issue number one, that 50% of the casualties are caused by artillery, provided a way for me to determine the combat strengths of units. For me, the starting point was the French infantry division. It had a very simple infantry artillery structure with 12,000 riflemen and 60 75 millimeter guns. So since half of the enemy's losses were caused by artillery, this told me that half of the division's combat strength came from the 60 guns, the other half from the infantry component. And from there, I could extrapolate to other units to determine their relative combat strengths. Core issue number two, that the bottleneck supply resource was artillery ammunition, provided a way for me to design the supply system. The system assumes that supplies such as food, fodder, rifle ammunition, and other items are relatively readily available when compared to the bottleneck resource of artillery ammunition. And I found that this critical resource was used consistently at the rate of 100 rounds per gun per day in combat. This allowed me to create a simple supply system that properly regulates when units can attack, and this in turn resulted in the games having realistic periods of buildup versus periods of offensive operations. Core issue three, that an attacker needs to have 3 times the defender's strength for parity in combat results, provided a way for me to design the combat results system. My system is different. It is points-based rather than odds-based. And this allows for every involved strength point to influence the outcome compared to the traditional odds-based system, where you're stuck with 19 versus 5 and then you get upset. All right, in this example, let's say the attacker has a total of 22 strength points. Well, this column will tell him what the range of options are, or excuse me, the range of possibilities are in terms of strength points of losses inflicted on the defender. The defender then totals up his number of strength points, triples that due to the fundamental cause and effect relationship, finds a corresponding column, and similarly makes a die roll that determines how many losses are inflicted on the attacker. So this way, in every combat, both sides take losses, and this makes the combat results much more realistic. The next big issue in the design was complexity versus playability. And I wanted a trade-off that would keep things as simple or as playable as possible, yet retain the realism. I use a four-day turn because turns representing longer periods of time required complex turn sequences. By setting the turn length at 4 days, I could use the simple move and attack turn sequence that you see here. This allowed me to avoid the kind of complex turn sequences that you see here. Go ahead to the next one. And this isn't even the entire thing. That's just for one turn, right? Okay, let's move on. I should also talk about the most visually striking aspect of my games, which is the terrain. The terrain on the maps is hexide-based rather than hex-based. This triples the amount of terrain information on the maps and provides the most accurate terrain information on an operational war game map of this scale. While it is different than the accepted norm, it only takes a player a couple of moves with a single counter to understand it. And this terrain system provides a lot of additional geographic information without adding much to the complexity of the war game. This provides for a much more realistic depiction of the terrain, which is a major influencer of combat operations. All of the above concepts apply to the design of business simulations, and they should be used in a similar fashion. Start with the core issues the business deals with. Identify the critical and bottleneck resources. Investigate fundamental cause and effect relationships. Identify core processes. Map them out step by step. Map out the business battlefield, but base this on a realistic reconnaissance of the actual competitive environment that the business is operating in. Design simulations around the decisions you need the player to make regarding these things. For example, what are the parameters for moving around critical resources? In many cases, I found that just designing the simulation will illuminate what many of the problems facing the business are and what can be quickly done to make improvements. Simulations will allow you to quickly train people in the intricacies of processes and associated decision making for any business. Using them will dramatically improve the skills and abilities of business decision makers and improve their insight into their own operations. Using simulations will save businesses significant sums as they prevent real-life mistakes and will enable them to make significant strides past their competition. All right. In conclusion, I have to stop my foot. Okay. War games and simulations are essential to gaining the deepest level of insight into military or business decision-making environments. We have to take action and use our influence to increase their use. The military must require that those moving up know how to use war games. They need to make war games a mandatory part of their professional education. Businesses need to develop realistic simulations for their market space and then train and evaluate potential leaders in their use. By doing these things, we can best assure that our organizational leaders will avoid the mistakes of the past and be best prepared to dominate the competition in our respective fields.